What's up? We are so back. Canucks Talk, baby, back on the air for another season. Or at least for today. I guess we could get canceled. Still, just because we're back on today doesn't mean we'll last all year.
Never say
never.
Fingers
crossed, buddy. Fingers crossed that we're going to be back for another year.
Hey, it's our fourth season, and in radio it show is. Years, that means
Boy,
it's our 40th
yes,
season.
Yes, that means we are on the chopping block next. Any day now.
Let's go.
It is good to be back. We made people wait a little bit. Got lots of when are you guys coming back messages, but you were like putting in a shift up in Penticton, so we didn't want to add that to your plate as well. So we waited until you're back in town after training camp. But look, they haven't even played a preseason game, so don't worry. We got lots of runway here, guys, to get everything under control.
Yeah, well, we've got Batch, who also yep. was up in Penticton for as long as me.
Mm-hmm.
So you've legitimately got the two guys that saw everything the Canucks did in terms of practices,
there you go.
In terms of young stars. So he's the perfect guest to have on today. I'll dump like all of my scouting notebook, all of my takes yep. stemming out of training camp in later segments. It'll be fun.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Of course, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber and Ladner has moved to Progress Ooh. Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome details at DunbarLumber.com. And as always, we are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? As you mentioned, Batch is going to join us at 12:30. And of course, yeah, as you said, he was up there the whole time, you know, doing normal Batch stuff in every scrum, at every practice, at every skate, calling the scrimmage yesterday. So we'll get Batch to weigh in on everything at 12:30. I also just want to note, we've got a very exciting roster of regular guests that maybe we can roll out over the course of this week. But one note in particular, the crossover is back on Wednesday with our pals Donnie and Dolly. So make sure you tune in for that.
Where else will I get the definitions for the words that I say? need more Dolly in my life.
I gotta say, it's not like they're like that crazy words. You know what I mean?
No, I know.
It's like, really? You've never heard triumvirate before? That's escaped you? You've never come across that word in your life? I guess so.
Also, you know, the thing that bothers me is the insistence that hockey coverage not be
yeah.
interesting or insightful or, like, refer to things outside of hockey itself. Like, if people wouldn't say it in hockey, you shouldn't say it. It's
yep.
like, no, I think the sport's best analyzed
Sorry,
from
can,
without.
We can push the envelope a little bit from time to time.
A little bit.
Yeah. From time to time. All right, but before we do any of that, of course, we're bringing it back.
There's a team called the Senators.
That's so true.
They have a Spartan mascot. Surely we can invoke the classic.
So true. Let's start it off with the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today. First one of the new season, September 23rd. And as I told Drance when he, in a panic, asked me 5 minutes before he went on air, how does the whiteboard work again? What are we doing? We'll start with the headlines. And the headline is Canucks wrap up training camp, wrap up a lengthy stay in Penticton as an organization, beginning with young stars. And then, of course, culminating in training camp and the scrimmage yesterday. And look, we got a lot of time later on in the show, right? So we got lots to do in the whiteboard. We won't fill all of your training camp takes, all of my training camp takes in right now in the headlines, but kind of big picture, what was your takeaway or some of your key takeaways from training camp in Penticton?
Yeah, so two tracks for me in Penticton, right? There was one thing that I wanted to buy high on and one thing that I wanted to sell low on over the course of my time in Penticton watching the Canucks skate. Now, I'll start with the positive because everyone knows that's how I am wired.
Of course.
Right? I like
yes.
to lead with what's uplifting. Okay, so the Canucks focus at training camp with the amount of transition and breakout drills and like pretty specific breakout drills too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Rick Tocchet discussing landmarks, a new Tocchetism for us to talk about all season long. And really we saw some of it. I'll sort of describe it further. But sort of had me thinking that, you know, that there's, I think, ample evidence that the Canucks as a club could address what was by far
mm-hmm.
their most glaring weakness. I'd go so far as to say fatal flaw over the course of last season, which was their inability to generate volume at like an elite team. They managed to score goals like a high-end team, but they weren't.
At least early in the year, but that fell off a lot
for sure
later on, right?
And then you get to the playoffs and you're generating like fewer shots than any team in history through eight games.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're outplayed three times in Nashville, but managed to pull off three circus wins across those three games. And then, you know, you score one goal with a chance to advance to the conference final against the Oilers, you know, until the last 10 minutes when you're already down 3-0 of game one, right? Like across 110 minutes of hockey, the Canucks had one goal,
mm-hmm.
and it felt like they were fortunate to have that one goal, right? So, look, this team went out, and this is sort of, I want to talk about it not in terms of like who they added and what it looked like at camp. I want to talk about it more holistically in terms of the way that we saw this management group in conjunction with Rick Tocchet, right, with that alignment that they like to talk about, sort of function to level this team up defensively, right, with where it was... You identify the sorts of players that fit with how Tocchet
yep.
wanted to play in terms of having those pacey defenders backchecking, in terms of having that size on the back end. You know, combine that with a super bought-in group that manages the puck conservatively, and you can accomplish something unbelievable, which is one of the most significant year-over-year turnarounds that we've ever seen defensively. Make no mistake, the amount of goals and the amount of points that Canucks players put up aside, like in terms of generating shots and scoring chances, the Canucks were in the territory of like the Habs
yeah.
and the Red Wings and like a bunch of other teams you don't want to be in the company of. The Arizona Coyotes, in terms, they don't even
RIP.
Exist anymore
yeah.
In terms of what they were able to generate. And when you think about it, like DeBrusk, Heinen, Sprong, Sherwood,
mm-hmm.
right? And then in conjunction with seeing it at camp, and I don't just mean that like, oh, those players are fast and looked skilled, like obviously, I mean in terms of the emphasis, right? The idea that you're combining sort of identifying the problem, diagnosing it, adding sort of player recruitment onto systems,
yep.
right, play, and then sort of operating at that higher level where we've seen, and I actually think I have some trust in, this organization's ability to make like quantum leaps forward in terms of addressing specific areas of their game, especially after last season. I'm buying high on their rush attack after training
camp. And from afar, my takeaway from training camp was that emphasis on rush chances and creativity and offense and all of that was a lot more than just lip service. Because it's very easy. You think of across sports, right? Like the defensive-minded NFL coach, it's like, we're going to be more aggressive offensively. I want to take more risks. And then the regular season comes around, and it's like, oh, 4th-and-2, now we're going to punt, right? You know what I mean?
Totally.
It's easy to pay the lip service in the summer. It's hard when you're bread and butter as a coach, as we saw last year, and what won you the Jack Adams was this intense emphasis on the defensive side of things. It's actually very, very difficult to go beyond the lip service and be like, no, we are focusing this training camp on the offensive side of things. I wasn't there, but that was my takeaway from your reporting for Batch. All of it was, he's dead serious about this. Like, this is going to be an ongoing, real focus for them.
I mean, I pride myself on being able to watch practice. I've never seen an NHL training camp that was as focused on a specific area of the game as the Canucks training camp was on breakouts and transition play. And like, this probably doesn't belong in the whiteboard, but it's our first show back, so I know you'll indulge me. You're not sick of me yet. They had this drill where the weak side winger, okay,
mm-hmm.
moves, pops into the middle of the ice, right? As the defender's breaking it out, and as sort of the center and the wing just skate full tilt, like 100 miles per hour, bullet train speed into the zone. And the idea is that the defender should try and hit the player in the middle, either for the deflection, right? Or to make a skill play to send in one of those players moving at a million miles mm-hmm. per hour. And I thought this was such a thoughtful way for the Canucks to sort of start with those landmarks and that neutral zone structure to enable the breakout that they're obviously going after here. Not just because this is a good forechecking team. So if the play works, you know, and you've got DeBrusk or Kiefer Sherwood
yep.
streaking in at a million miles per hour, you know, on one defender out wide, like great. That's a fantastic outcome. You love that. But also if it's just deflected into the zone and you've got forecheckers going a million miles per hour, you're laughing. Like, this is a good forechecking
mm-hmm.
team. What I also like about it is one thing that the Canucks are going to have once you have, especially Pettersson, Miller, Suter down the middle, is they're going to have centermen, all of whom I kind of prefer as an F1 as opposed to an F3, right? Like, they're all really good at being disruptive. You know, Pettersson's anticipation, JT Miller's size,
mm-hmm.
right? And the first step, right? His quickness, the fact
yep.
that he can kind of catch guys unaware. Pugh Suter's just, like, general always in the right spot in this. You know, sort of this is going to give Vancouver's centerman sort of more of an opportunity if they're using this breakout to, you know, use their skill set as like pressure players, right? You turn Miller and Pettersson effectively into like pass rushers, right? Breaking breakouts themselves. I there's so much about that I like, and that just seems thoughtful and well calibrated to the personnel that Vancouver has, and on down the lineup. This drill, I'd noted it, I'd marked it down, I'd diagrammed it and written about it, and then DeBrusk brought it up to me independently when I was having a chat with him. So just sort of talking about the benefits of having that structure and how different it was from some of the camps that he's been at in the past, it really was a remarkable thing to witness, and it was in marked contrast, to the other side of the coin, it was in marked contrast to the growing concern that I felt throughout the weekend, allayed only somewhat by the Lankinen signing on Saturday,
yes,
and then Seelov's putting in a star turn at the Canucks scrimmage on Sunday, about Canucks goaltending, right? Where, you know, Jiří Patera had a rough camp, to put it mildly, right? Doesn't look like an NHL option.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, those drills weren't very forgiving to goaltenders, and that probably enhanced. But I also think you can go further back, right? It's not just about the goaltenders that were on the ice or the uncertainty around Thatcher Demko, given the unprecedented injury that he's dealing with. We'll get a little more into that in the broadsheet. But it was like Ian Clark's departure and the vibes around that. So it's like, as opposed to being this like holistic, thoughtful, you know, interesting approach to leveling up, it's like the goaltending situation, even above the ice level, seems racked by uncertainty and bad vibes. And then you see the goaltenders there. Tolopilo probably held up the best on balance throughout camp. He's never played an NHL game. Patera looked like he was struggling. Seelov's turned it on a little bit later. Like, just bringing in Lankinen, just bringing in someone to give you a baseline. It's like, okay, this guy's played 100 NHL games. He stopped an average rate of pucks in 100 NHL games. Not that it's going to fix everything. Not that it's a cure-all. But man, does it sort of add some baseline?
Yeah.
That I really feel like the Canucks needed, because as much as I was impressed by what I was seeing from Canucks skaters, certainly until end of day Saturday when the Lankinen press release dropped, you know, I was also watching practice and feeling like the Canucks goaltending situation was like Jason in a horror movie. Like, no matter what you did, it was just sort of looming It Follows style behind you. Nice to see them address it and sort of allay that concern a little bit.
So we can wrap in kind of the goaltending discussion between the headlines and the broadsheet. And by the way, preseason coverage here on 650 brought to you by Tile Town, as BC's favorite hockey team kicks off a new season. Receive 20% off any regular priced in-stock tile. Visit mytiletown.ca for details, because, of course, a headline, Canucks signed Kevin Lankinen, 1 year, $875,000 deal. As you said, just gives them that base level of experience, stability that they were really lacking without Thatcher Demko healthy and good to go right now. On Thatcher Demko, Kevin Woodley, of course, from In Goal Magazine, NHL.com, regular contributor here on 650, on Alfred and Bruff today, reporting that Demko has a popliteus injury, which Woodley characterized
nice
as a small but somewhat significant stabilizing muscle in the back area of the knee, in the rear of the knee. So I don't know. Okay, it's a popliteus. Like, we can put a name on it now. It doesn't really change my understanding too much. I'm not a doctor of like what to expect, other than, okay, at least we can name it, and there's uncertainty around the timeline for
it. I don't think it changes anyone's understanding of it, because this is such a rare injury,
yeah,
as Demko himself sort of laid out, right? No hockey player, no goaltender, maybe a few soccer players. So it's not like, you know, MCL, ACL, you know, something we're a little bit more familiar with, where we've got, you know, case studies of performance and performance lags and recovery times and what's the re-injury risk, and, you know, a whole host of Twitter doctors focused on fantasy football who, you know, have greatly enhanced our understanding. Or, you know, we talk about ACLs and I'm like, well, there's a European body of research that slightly differs from the North American in terms of how long a performance impact lags. I mean, you know, not that we're experts by any means, but we're immersed enough that we have all these baseline sort of rules and expectations. You know, this is one where it's like, we don't know. Demko doesn't know. The Canucks don't know. Science doesn't know, you know? So more than anything, I think just as we look at this, because the Canucks continue to insist that they're really optimistic about Demko, and that's both public and private. I watched Demko go through some of his sessions, including one on Sunday, and, you know, he was in some post integrations. The pace was decent, mm-hmm. like was pretty decent. He was getting up consistently on one leg as opposed to using both legs. But the leg that he was consistently using to get up was the left one,
which is
the one that we think is injured.
Yeah.
So to me, that's probably a strengthening exercise as opposed to him like favoring, quote unquote, something. Right. If it had been the other way around,
yeah.
I'd be like, oh, boy. But you know, so there's none of that when I watch him go through these rehab sessions. I just don't know. Right. Demko could be totally fine. Back in the saddle. One of the best goaltenders in hockey.
Mm-hmm.
Or it'll be a bit, and he comes back and there's an injury lag, or he can't hold up to you know, a 75% workload, or they'll have to manage it a certain way, or I just don't know.
I think I don't think
anyone else does.
The only thing I would say with any certainty is that it's going to be a storyline all season. Like, even if he's playing, even if he's back, you know, end of October and is playing really well and it's February and there hasn't been a re-injury or anything, it's still going to be a story. And I think we're going to see that through how they manage it and how they work with him, that they're going to acknowledge that, yeah, this is a thing, right? Like, they're not pretending like, oh, no, he'll be back and he'll be fine and we'll never think about it again, right? There seems to be an acknowledgement from the organization, from Demko, that this is going to require thoughtful management throughout the season. Now, I think there's even a world where that's like a silver lining, right? Where his workload is kept at a very manageable level by the time they get in to the playoffs. Obviously, there's a lot of downside associated with it as well. But again, like, the only thing I think we really know for sure is that this is something we're going to be tracking pretty obsessively throughout the whole course of the season.
Yeah, and this brings us to sort of item two on the broadsheet, which was Friedman talking about on the 32 Thoughts podcast with Kyle Bukauskas that Artur Shelov's agent has made it known to the Canucks that he wants to be in the NHL this season, mm-hmm. which we knew, but of course Shelov's is waiver exempt.
And of course you come in and you do what you do in the playoffs and the team turns to you and relies on you in those high pressure games. Like, yeah, you think you're an NHL goalie now. Of course you do.
Well, and your contract took a bit to get done. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is all part of a conversation, part of a relationship, part of a player, you know, seizing the reins and wanting the shot to be a full-time NHL goalie. Well, now the Canucks have Kevin Lankinen in the building too, and that's an additional factor to consider. One thing I'm hearing, man, is that the Canucks' active plan at the moment, plan A, is to carry three goaltenders. And, you know, that has significant knock-on effects for the rest of the roster
mm-hmm.
and sort of the shape of what various other roster battles will look like as we go through the balance.
It does seem to me, okay, plan A could be to carry three goalies, but because, as you said, with that, the rest of the impact on the roster and the way injuries crop up and you need to carry eight defensemen or 14 forwards at certain times of the year, that at some point she loves is probably going to go down to the AHL, like at some point this season. And now it might be like for a week until we get that healthy defenseman back and then we can go back to carrying three goalies, but they seem primed to use that waiver ineligibility of Shelov's to me, right? Like, just that's it's going to be really difficult to carry three goalies from game one to game 82.
Very,
I would be very surprised if that's the case,
especially without tapping in any way to LTI. You know what I mean? Given that you'll
exactly.
need to use IR to free up roster spots and on and on. I mean, the juggling act that this management group's about to attempt, without question. Extraordinarily difficult.
Okay, that takes us to the lineup notes. And coming out of training camp in the scrimmage yesterday, the Canucks made, I think, 17 cuts from the training camp roster. And that's a variety of players released from PTOs and ATOs, players sent back to junior, players assigned to Abbotsford.
Yeah, so eight guys who were on PTOs assigned to Abbotsford. So these are guys on AHL contracts for the most part, right? Up with the big team on PTOs. None of them saw time with either any of the NHL groups. Ty Haliburta from the Vancouver Giants,
mm-hmm.
A WHLer and Dylan Ferguson, they were sort of released outright. And then Josh Bloom and Ty Glover are sort of the Canucks signed prospects who were cut. Won't see time in
preseason,
which is meaningful because really it's about the names that aren't here. It's about Vilmer Ulriksson,
uh-huh.
right? Vilmer Ulriksson at 19 looks like he might get in a preseason game. That's a significant accomplishment, right? Christian Felton might get into an American League game. Those are significant milestones for young players. And then they released Parker Alkos, who I actually really liked throughout Young Stars and training camp. Anthony Romani, Basil Sensonens.
Uh-huh.
No, it's sorry, I got that wrong.
Sensonen? We'll get
it
from,
no, it's not that. It's we'll ask Batch. Batch has it down. And then Riley Patterson, who I thought stood out at camp and through Young Stars, they were reassigned to their junior teams.
Yeah. So already cuts. Now they have, what is it, 5 preseason games in 7 days coming up here.
Yeah,
so they'll need bodies. We'll see when they do their next kind of round of cuts here. But as you said, for a guy like Ulrichsen, who impressed Tockett at Young Stars, impressed him at training camp, big potential opportunity to get into some preseason action here.
Yeah. And probably not to like make the team.
No.
You know, if you get into a preseason game, you sign your ELC, it can slide. Like, that's a fabulous...
That's a really successful training camp experience for a player like Vilmar Ulrichsen.
For a player like Ulrichsen.
Okay, there's some other stuff in kind of the lineup notes sphere that we can get into, like the LTIR stuff.
Yeah, we'll
just
do
kind
all
of,
that on...
Yeah, you know, stock watch on different players, but we'll punt that for later on in the show. We'll go into the playoff forecast and the betting odds portion. I'll kind of roll them all together here.
Yeah, just really quick, had a long chat with Dom Lecision because Dom's model has been projecting like the Dom's model doesn't know what to do with Demko's status, right? So the model assumes that Demko has elite goaltending, and so I was sort of, or the Demko is an elite goaltender, and so the Canucks are projected to have elite goaltending. And I just sent a note to Dom and we had a bit of a discussion over the weekend, and I was like, hey man, like, you might want to just add some uncertainty into the mix here. Not, you know, that they're necessarily going to be bad or good. I would just price it a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he sort of did so, reduced Demko's games played, you know, in terms of what the model's assumptions were. Canucks ended up sort of being middle of the road in terms of goaltending, still, per his model, a top 10 team. So for what it's worth, the model is very high on the Canucks and their playoff probabilities. When that forecast drops is going to be significant. We can relax it now until it does.
And
how
that,
about that?
Sure.
Yeah, we'll like kick this out of the
way. Yeah. Until it drops. Until we have something. But in terms of the betting odds, I mean, that matches what we're seeing from the markets, right? If you're just looking at price to make the playoffs, I was checking around a few places, anywhere between like -250 and -320. So kind of right around like 5th or 6th odds in the Western Conference.
Yeah, -290.
Yeah.
And the Canucks have, it's really strange too. Like, if you go look at teams that, in terms of their Stanley Cup odds, the Canucks are at the fringes of the top 10, like 8,
mm-hmm.
8th, something like that. But if you go look at like the odds for which teams are most likely to get 110 points, the Canucks are like 12th.
Hmm.
So there's sort of an interesting thing where the market thinks that this team might be a handful in the playoffs, but is less confident.
Well, and one thing that bridges that gap is Demko, right?
Totally.
Like, if you're like, well, we don't know how much regular season action you're going to get from him, but if he's healthy in the playoffs, then all of a sudden, you know, this could be a 101 point team that looks a lot more daunting than that when the playoffs roll around.
One,
right?
One last gambling line item that I want to get your reaction to: over unders for the entire Pacific. You ready? Because the Canucks are at 99.5. We'll start there.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, first to last. In the Pacific, according to preseason over-unders. Oilers, 108.5. Canucks, 99.5. Vegas, 98.5.
Okay.
LA, 96.5. Seattle, 87.5. Calgary, 81.5. Bet the under. Ducks, 70.5. Sharks, 63.5. What's your reaction to that?
My reaction is, like, it's a pretty stratified division. What I would say is, like, there's a clear tier one in Edmonton, and mm-hmm. then you've got a group of, like, tier two, we're already doing tiers, of Canucks, Vegas, and Edmonton, and, like, it would be pretty surprising to see Canucks, Vegas, and LA, it would be pretty surprising to see Seattle jump up and go into that group. Like,
I think Seattle can jump up.
There's big gaps between the tiers there, though.
There
you know
are,
what I mean?
There are, for sure, but, like, you know...
But weird things happen.
Well, I don't even think a weird thing has to happen. Matty Beniers becomes an elite player again is all that really needs to happen for them to be in that mix. I would actually look at this and say I think the Canucks are underpriced. I think there should be... I don't think they are that much further away from the Oilers than they are close to Vegas and LA. I actually think they're tiered incorrectly in terms of these prices. And then the last one that I think is massively, massively wrong is Flames at 81.5.
Yeah, you hate the Flames.
No, I just, they're not in a different tier than the Ducks and the Sharks this year, and people just need to, like, appreciate that.
I just think there's still enough talent there. Although the question is the blue line for me. We don't have to get into a prolonged Calgary Flames debate here because we gotta go to Batch.
Is that Dom?
That was exciting,
us off?
Dom.
I like that. Was that you playing us off?
No, there's a touch thing here, and yeah. I didn't realize it was touch.
It kind of is playing you guys off, though, because you do have to break.
I kind of like that. Play us.
Play a random sounder. Yeah, we're going too long. Oops.
Get some Oscars.
Stops
tracks.
The conversation, at least. All right. On that note, we will go to break. Brendan Batchelor from 650 joins us next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.